This is Day to Day. I'm Madeline Brand. In a few minutes, a look at an 80s rocker who now prefers elementary schools to nightclubs, but first to the Supreme Court. The court has agreed to hear two major cases, and it rejected some others. Here to explain their significance is Slate's and Day to Day's legal analyst, Dahlia Lithwick. Hi, Dahlia.
Hi, Madeline.
Dahlia, tell us first about the cases the court agreed to hear.
Sure. Well, the first one is a really crucial case about whether we can sue our HMOs. And essentially, the court is going to finally, hopefully, clarify the question of whether HMOs can be subject to suit when they refuse to cover medical care, and whether they can be subject to suit under state laws rather than the federal law, ERISA, the 1974 federal law that usually occupies the entire sort of legal field, that you can only sue under ERISA. State laws are much more patient-friendly, and so now the question is going to be whether state laws can prevail. The other one is a Tenth Circuit case about whether the Bureau of Land Management, which is a federal bureau, is allowed to be sort of micromanaged by angry environmentalists who don't like the way the BLM is protecting the wilderness areas. This is a case where the Bush administration is sort of saying, get out and let our regulatory agencies do their job, and the environmentalists are saying, you're not taking good enough care of the wilderness.
And Dahlia, tell us about the cases the court rejected, because rejecting cases is also an important message the court sends out.
It absolutely is. They rejected two very important cases yesterday. One was a suit, believe it or not, out of the Ninth Circuit, which they always seem to take, but they refused to overturn a Ninth Circuit ruling, and it involved a lawsuit by the Suzuki Car Company against Consumers Union for a story that was published in Consumer Reports that was rating the Suzuki Samurai. The story claimed that the Samurai tended to roll, and Suzuki disputes that fact and sued Consumers Union. The Ninth Circuit is allowing that suit to go forward, and everyone was hoping the Supreme Court would get involved and set a standard for when journalists can review critically companies and products, but the court refused to hear it. The other, of course, big case that the court refused to hear yesterday was Alabama Chief Justice Roy Moore's appeal on his 5,300-pound granite monument to the Ten Commandments that he had been told needed to be removed from the federal court building. Now, because of the refusal to hear that case, the lower courts remain in complete disarray on this whole complex issue of when you can put religious monuments in public spaces.
So that leaves the Pledge of Allegiance case, the one where they will consider whether to have under God in the Pledge of Allegiance, as the biggest religion-related case of the term. Remind us about the ins and outs of that case and whether it could shed any light on this Ten Commandments issue.
The Pledge of Allegiance case is quite different from the monument case because we're dealing with public schools rather than public spaces. And the courts have always been very, very protective of students in public schools and the feeling that they may be coerced into some religious ceremony that they don't want. So I think whatever standard the court sets up in the Pledge case probably won't illuminate a lot about the standard in public monuments cases. Essentially, the argument is going to be that that word God in the Pledge has actually no religious significance, that it's been totally drained of its religious significance, so it's sort of a secular statement. That's a much harder argument to make when you're talking about the Ten Commandments. I don't think anyone really wants to take the position that the Ten Commandments are simply a secular monument. So in some sense, the Pledge case is a much easier, much closer case for the court.
Now, the court is not just deciding to hear cases. It's actually hearing cases at the moment. And yesterday, the justices heard oral arguments in a case involving drug arrests of a car full of people. Tell us what happened and how the court might rule.
Essentially, what happened, Madeline, is that the police stopped a car with three occupants, found drugs in the car. All three occupants refused to claim the drugs. So the cop essentially said, I'm going to arrest all three of you until someone fesses up. The person who had actually possessed the drugs claimed later on during his trial that that was an illegal arrest because it violated his Fourth Amendment right. Why? Because the police can't arrest you without probable cause for an arrest. And his argument was the police cannot have had probable cause to believe that all three occupants of the car possessed that one little baggie of drugs. That was the issue before the court, and I have to say the court was not very sympathetic to his argument. They seemed to believe the argument of the Bush administration and of the state of Maryland, both of whom argued, look, if you're in a car with someone who has drugs, we're going to assume that you have knowledge of those drugs. It led to some funny hypotheticals, like Justice O'Connor saying, what if he's driving his old mother to the supermarket and she doesn't know about the drugs? What if he's dropping off his kid at school and he doesn't know about the drugs? But the big issue really is that it sounds like the court is going to give police much, much broader powers to arrest all the occupants in a vehicle if drugs are found.
Legal analyst Dahlia Lithwick writes the jurisprudence column in Slate. Thanks, Dahlia.
You're most welcome.